Chapter 8. Dinner with Sam and Elaine. Sam and Elaine just realize they haven't met you yet. Come over. We're having dinner at 7. Kelly hung up before there could be further discussion. It was true. Robert had never met them, had never even seen them. They never came out to the patio as far as he knew, and he kept a pretty good lookout on the patio. The time on his phone was 4 o'clock. That gave him 3 hours to get ready. He decided he better shower and shave. The Gallos, his benefactors, patrons of the arts for sure. Michelangelo had the Medici family, the rulers of Florence, the popes of Rome, Leonardo da Vinci had Cesare Borgia and the King of France and their ladies and queens. Now he had the Gallos, also a fine Italian family, Sam and the Lady Elaine. Sam and Elaine. Mr. and Mrs. Gallo. Sam and Elaine Gallo. He whispered their names through his shower. He had found them, and they had saved his life. Or were they the ones who had found him? He was confused on that point. In any event, he had a fine place to live, his food and needs provided, and time to create the art he loved in his paintings and photography. Did you forget you were about to commit suicide? No. Okay, there was just one small fly in the ointment, a mistake, perhaps an oversight, that job at the pawn shop. That really had to go. His talent was being wasted illustrating pornographic stories. He was better than that. Tonight would be the time to talk to his benefactors about it. They needed to understand his plight. Tonight they would see he was meant for greater things. And Kelly? Robert could take a hint the size of a baseball bat on the side of his head. Leave me alone. I'm not interested in you. Okay. That's fine with me. Tonight it was just he and the Gallos. He could ignore Kelly. Yes. That will show her. Kelly would see. Tonight she would see him in a new light. You need to man up, she had said. Tonight he would. Robert looked in the bedroom closet. It was small, almost an afterthought when the carriage house had been renovated. The clothing he had took up about 10% of its space. What to wear? His only dress shirt had a spot. Robert tried to soap it out. No luck. Okay, I'll wear a sweater and my sport coat. The temperature was going to drop to around 10 degrees tonight, and Robert didn't have an overcoat, not a dress one. Only an old jacket. That's not a good first impression. You only have the first time to make a first impression. Who had told him that? His mother? No. Nothing worthwhile ever came from her. No, not her. No overcoat then. The sport coat will have to do. That's okay. It's just across the patio. Don't be late, but not early either, just on time. From here to the back door is 30 seconds, so say a minute to be sure. No dummy. Not the back door. That would be presumptuous, even for someone who lives in the back. The front door, about a minute, add a minute to be sure, so let's say 2 minutes from here to the front door, and add a minute for a fudge factor, so 3 minutes tops. Robert left at 6:50 and arrived at the front door at 6:51. He waited. The temperature in Chicago that night was 3 above zero. At exactly 7 o'clock, he rang the doorbell. Kelly answered. Geez, you look cold. She handed him a drink. Here, you like scotch, don't you? Robert's frozen hands carefully took hold of the glass. Yeah, how'd you know? I'm a good guesser. Besides, you look like a scotch drinker. Robert shivered a bit as the warmth of the house wrapped around him. So what does a scotch drinker look like? Kelly gave Robert a nudge with her hip. Like you. Then she glanced at his drink. You should get started on that if you want to catch up with Sam and Elaine. There's just the four of us, so we're eating in the small dining room. Robert's face had frozen in the Chicago winter. Now it felt hot in the heat of the mansion. Kelly introduced Sam Gallo first. Robert put out his hand to shake Sam's. Hello, I'm Robert Duran. It's nice to meet you, Mr. Gallo. Sam looked at Robert for a moment. He didn't get up, then looked indifferently at the room, and limply lifted his hand, his elbow still on his chair's arm. Robert bent down and took it. Sam was unshaven and in rumpled clothing. He had not done much to get ready for dinner. Actually, he had done nothing to get ready for dinner other than to tell the housekeeper to make sure the bar in the small dining room was stocked. Kelly's head nodded toward the other person at the table. "That's my mother." Robert took Mrs. Gallo's hand. Her perfume would have announced her presence two aisles away in a supermarket. Although Robert could not envision Mrs. Gallo as ever shopping in a supermarket, he thought she was dressed quite well and wondered if she was going out after dinner. "Hello, Robert, I'm Mrs. Gallo." "Elaine," Kelly said. "Her first name's Elaine." Elaine glared at Kelly. "Mrs. Gallo will do." She looked at Robert. "Kelly reminded us we hadn't met you yet, and we should have you over for dinner."
"Yes, thank you.
I had thought well of you after reading that magazine article that featured you." Elaine looked disdainfully at Sam.
"But my husband, unfortunately, brought home some books you've illustrated. Frankly, I couldn't get past the pornography."
"Yeah, I spend a lot of time there too." Robert was sorry for the quip even as he said it. He often said dumb things when he was nervous. Tonight he was very nervous. Sam gave Robert a punch in the mouth glare, then slapped his hand on the table and erupted laughing.
"Son of a bitch.
So what are you drinking there?"
"Scotch, sir."
"Shit. Scotch is for women. Here, have a bourbon. That's a man's drink."
"Oh, no thank you, sir. I really don't like bourbon. I just drink scotch."
Robert's ears were burning. He hoped it was not noticeable. When he was younger, they would do that whenever he was excited or embarrassed. There was a photograph, the one he kept in his drawer, taken at Christmas. His ears were as red as the lights on the tree. His mother and father were in it, so he knew he couldn't have been much more than 4 years old.
"Well, son of a bitch.
Hell, all right. You're either a bourbon man or a scotch one. I've never met anyone who liked both. Kind of like with women. You're either a tit man or a leg man.
Although," Sam snorted, "goddamn, I like them both."
Robert glanced out of the corners of his eyes at Mrs. Gallo. She was looking at the dining room's wall. Kelly shifted in her seat. Robert tried small talk to change the subject.
"I know you're Italian, but your daughter's name, Kelly, isn't that Irish? How did she come by that name?
What's the matter, you don't like the name?"
"Oh, no sir, I think it's a pretty name. I'm just curious."
"Well, her mother's a damn Mick. She came up with it." Sam pointed toward Kelly.
"I had nothing to do with that."
Then he looked at Elaine. "You were a sexy broad once, weren't you?" Elaine sat up a little straighter in her chair.
"I try to keep looking nice."
"Nice?"
"Yeah, but not sexy."
Sam pinched Kelly's arm.
"Now, with Kelly, the boys are crawling all over her.
Aren't they?" That was said as a statement, not a question. Sam leaned over to Robert like he was going to share a dirty secret, his breath full of bourbon.
"Her last name's Heffernan.
Means little devil, so you better damn well watch out for her."
"Little demon," Kelly corrected him.
"It means little demon, not little devil.
But yeah, you better watch out for me.
Little demon, little devil." Sam did not like being corrected.
"Who gives a shit?"
Robert thought to try a different subject. "When I moved in, I think you were on a family vacation."
Kelly looked relieved.
"Oh, yes. We go for a couple of months every summer to the cottage."
Elaine corrected Kelly.
"Actually, that's our lake house." Robert wasn't sure why, perhaps Mrs. Gallo's haughtiness, perhaps his nervousness.
"I would think this is your lake house."
Both Sam and Elaine stared at him.
"Seeing that you're right on Lake Michigan."
No response.
"And this is your house."
No response.
"This isn't working.
And Lake Michigan is."
Kelly had removed her shoes. Her foot reached under the table, and her toes tapped Robert's leg.
"Well, I like to call it the cottage. I loved going there when I was little."
"Cottage, lake house," Sam blurted.
"It's a goddamn mansion. I made it the largest on the lake.
Those sons of bitches know I'm there. Kelly smiled at Robert. Well, I remember it as a small, beautiful place when we first went there. Her foot moved up Robert's leg, pulling the cuff of his pants with it. I think I was 8. He could feel her toes wiggling against his skin. Sam continued on as if not hearing Kelly. He was now on to his favorite topic. Damn right. I played that smart. I bought that place, and then before anyone knew what I was doing, bought up the other properties on that side of the lake. They were all small houses built in the 20s and 30s. After I got it all, I moved everyone out and tore them down. Then I built some big homes. Sam glared at Robert. Mine being the biggest. Yes, sir. Robert's voice was a pitch higher than normal. Kelly's foot had found his lap. It's only a couple of hours' drive out of Chicago, but it was still undiscovered. I could see it would be a gold mine. One way or the other, I got them all to sell out. All except the son of a bitch. Son of a bitch? Robert asked. His focus had been on Kelly's tapping foot, but the son of a bitch demanded some attention. Yeah, son of a bitch Johnston. We put in a golf course. Only a 9-hole. If that goddamn son of a bitch would have sold me his property, it would be an 18-hole. But I got even. I put the clubhouse as close to his property as I could. Elaine saw an opportunity to chide her husband. Maybe too close. He took you to court on that. Kelly's foot applied itself to Robert's crotch. He stopped paying attention to the guy's patter. Sam frowned at Elaine. Yeah. I had to pay the son of a bitch a little, but the place got to stay put. Elaine was not done. He was so mad he threatened to kill you. It even made the newspaper. Someone should kill that man. Sam looked at Robert. I would have called me a son of a bitch. Someone should kill that son of a bitch. Biggest news that damn town ever had. I got even though. I have big bands up there, throw some big parties, pour a lot of booze. The son of a bitch gets to hear that all summer long. Sam picked up his glass to take a drink. Elaine loved opportunities to poke at Sam. Johnston was Sam's sore spot. Tell him more about old man Johnston. Kelly's foot stopped its activity but stayed against Robert's crotch. Old man? Sam downed the drink. Hell, he's my age. Almost as rich as me too. Sam turned on Robert. Almost. Yes, sir. How'd he get rich? Well, I have to give the son of a bitch that. He earned it, same as me. Does he do what you do? How much do you think you know about what I do? Nothing, sir. I'm just asking. Let me tell you something. There's an old Italian saying, the secret to success. Alessandro non ha mai fatto quello che ha detto, Cesare non ha mai detto quello che ha fatto. You understand Italian? No, sir. Alexander never did what he said, Cesare never said what he did. You got that? Robert looked at his drink and shook his head. No, sir. Sam leaned toward Robert to share the secret. You can run your mouth off and fail, or keep it shut until you've done it. Sam bent back and snorted. And then it's too late. Anyway. No. Not what I do. He's a geologist. Geologists make money? They do when they take interest in the oil they find around the world. But money is nothing to him. He lives in a run-down cabin down the road from. Sam looked at Elaine, and sneered, which is as close to a smile as he ever managed, the cottage. Sam droned on, absorbed in his story about himself, and his quarrels with Johnston. Elaine, well, Elaine had more wine and was just absorbed. Kelly had been quiet while Sam talked about Johnston. Robert especially noticed she had stopped her footplay. When Sam paused to take a drink, Robert decided it was a good time to bring up his job. I've wanted to talk to you about my work at the shop. Sam laughed. You mean my goddamn porn store? Robert corrected him. Well, sir, I like to think of it as an erotic gallery. Hell, call it what you want. Sam is not to be corrected. But I own half of it, and I say it's a goddamn porn shop. Robert felt his face get warm. For sure his ears were as red as a Christmas tree ornament. Yes, sir. I know you own it. Your name is all over the place. I wanted to talk to you about. Who the hell do you think got you in there? Sam thumped his chest a couple of times. That's okay. Son of a bitch, it makes me money. My partner in there says you're okay. The stuff you're doing is helping sales. That's what I wanted to talk to you about. I was hoping I could do something different. Forget that. But, sir. I said forget it. You're going to keep doing what you've been doing. Robert glanced at Elaine for some support, but she was deep in her glass of wine, so he looked back at Sam. I was hoping I could explain to you my plan for a series of paintings about what America is. Its spirit. Its energy. Its heart. What a bullshit idea that is. You're not going to make any money with that. It's not about money, sir. It's to do something important with my life. Son of a bitch, it's always about money. You suck it up damn good here. Look what I've provided for you, and now you're throwing my generosity in my face. You should be grateful you're not out in the street. Robert looked down at the table. I was just hoping. You get to be around naked women all day, and you're complaining. What part of no don't you get? Sam now warmed to his second favorite topic, women. But you son of a bitch, you have some new model you've hidden away. My partner showed me some paintings you've done. He said they were so good they could almost be in a legit gallery. That model really inspired you. Damn, she looks familiar. Who is she? Is she from the shop? No. No, I know all of them, have had most. No, this one is like a sister and a concubine, a bride and a nymph all rolled into one sweet little package. Sam glared at Robert. I need to meet her. Oh, this is not good. Kelly's foot pressed against Robert's groin. Now, this was getting to be good. Yes, Robert, tell us about that. Who is she? Pushed by Sam and pressed by Kelly, Robert struggled to respond. Actually, sir, I just paint from photographs. Sam's hand slapped the table. Goddamn, that's what I told him. Your work is shit. Robert could accept that, as long as the subject wasn't who the model was. Yes, sir. You need to have a live model. Something to make your damn blood boil. Your work will be better, it will have life. Nothing like a real girl. Sam was playing a movie in his mind. Watching her chest move as she breathes. Her body swaying, the sounds and moans she makes. Her fragrance. Sam looked at Elaine. Oh, not those god-awful perfumes women like to put on. No, her natural scent. How they taste when your mouth is on them. And their mouths. I love to watch them talk and use those tongues. God, what they can do with their tongues. Most of all, their heat when you're near them, pulling you into them. Robert felt the heat. Kelly's foot had not left his crotch. Sam is also heating up. You have her in your room, the two of you, alone. You watch her undress, and listen to her gentle patter. Her soft lips. You breathe her in. You let her heat set you on fire until she has you. Then you take her. Paint that, and you'll have something. Sam took a drink. The trouble with art, with you artists, is you look at life and wonder about it. You don't live it. You watch, but you don't do? Robert nodded. His attention was on what Kelly's impatient foot was doing. Dinner finished, Kelly took Robert to the entryway, leaving the guys to their drinking. I'm sorry about Sam and Elaine. Sometimes, I could just kill them. It was fine. Your mom's perfume was a little overwhelming. I could taste it while I was eating. I think she's overcompensating. I almost feel sorry for her. Kelly tilted her head and looked at him. You're a really nice guy, aren't you? Robert laughed. What if I said I'm just trying to get into your pants? That may have been another one of the dumb things he said that night. Kelly moved closer to Robert. What if I said I'm not wearing any? She stood on her tiptoes and offered her neck to him. Do you like the way I smell? Robert nuzzled her. Yes. It's the lotion I had made for me. Kelly smiled. Don't go away. I'll be back in a second. Kelly returned, holding a jar. I think you're familiar with this. She took a little out and dabbed it under Robert's nose. Now you'll be smelling me all night. I'll be inside your mind. Then she put a little on Robert's lips. It tastes good too. She put an arm around his head and pulled it down to hers and licked his lips. Her face was warm against his. Then she put a little on her lips. Taste me. Robert leaned down and licked Kelly's lips. Then their tongues teased and explored each other's mouths, wet and slippery from the lotion and saliva. They spent some time tasting each other up and only broke to catch their breaths. Kelly handed Robert the jar. Here's a present for you. I figure you used up the last one I left you. Robert's face was already warm from kissing Kelly. Now it turned embarrassingly hot. He mumbled a thanks. I think my mother's sweet on you, Kelly said. Stay away from her. Your mother's not what's on my mind. She can be persuasive. Stay away. You don't want a relationship with her. Because of Sam? Because you're having one with me. There is a God, except for the jerk. What about Travis? Travis is away at school. Isn't he your boyfriend? Boyfriend? He'd like to be. Good luck with that. Kelly held Robert's head and leaned up so her tongue could go at him again. I'll be enough girl for you. Her pelvis rubbed against Robert, encouraging him where her foot had earlier. A chair scraped on the floor in the dining room. Kelly broke away. Someone's coming. Chapter 9. It's not just phone sex anymore. Robert ambled back to the carriage house, he barely noticed the cold. The image of the warm Kelly in his arms would have kept him heated through an Arctic freeze, heated and confused. He had gone to the dinner, having given up on Kelly and determined to get a new job. He left with his same job, and with Kelly. Shit. Head on, she had come crashing back into his life and was taking it over. In his bedroom, he set the jar Kelly had given him next to the old one. He felt a little embarrassed. Kelly had guessed right. The old one was empty. After he had used it up, he kept it for the faint scent of her, filling his mind with her at night. He sat on his bed, shaking away her image. This is crazy. None of this is working. Gallo's love of money will never change. I'll be doing porn for him for the rest of my life. And Kelly, she could change in an instant. I'm her boyfriend now, so she says, but tomorrow she'll want someone more adventurous, a Travis. His mouth could still feel Kelly's tongue exploring his. He shook his head again. No. Having to keep creating that damn porn was a deal breaker. He was going to leave this place and take the jars with him for as far as they would take him. He would just have to be content with his fantasies of Kelly. Robert took off his clothes and got into bed, opened the new jar, and Kelly filled the room. He closed his eyes, and Kelly's barefoot massaged him, then her hands caressed the lotion onto him. He became erect. His phone rang. It was Kelly, a regular call this time, not FaceTime. Robert was disappointed. The last time had embarrassed him, for sure, but it had also become a part of his regular fantasy repertoire. Unlock the door. I can't get in. That confused Robert. What door? I'm trying to get into your house, and you locked the door. Hurry up. It's cold out here. Robert grabbed a towel, wrapped it around him, and clutched it to him as he rushed to the door and opened it. Kelly walked in. She looked at the towel, covering Robert's still obvious erection. I thought I'd find you like that. She snickered and looked up at Robert. Were you thinking of me again? Kelly placed her hands on Robert's stomach. He flinched. They were cold from being outside. I had to wait for Sam and Elaine to go to bed. She took Robert's hands that were clinging to the towel and pulled his arms apart. Cold air drifted across Robert's pubic hair and what was left of his erection. Kelly took the towel and dropped it on the floor. I thought I would handle this personally. Kelly led Robert into the bedroom and pushed him onto his bed. It's cold in here. Kelly turned up the heat. She went to the bedstand and looked at the empty jar. I guess I'll have to keep you better supplied. She picked up the new jar. The bed sagged as Kelly kneeled in the middle and spread Robert's legs on each side of her.
"Let's put a little more on you." She scooped a gob out of the jar and rubbed the lotion on her hands.
They were still cold from being outside when she cradled Robert's balls, and he jerked. His legs clenched against Kelly's hips. His arm muscles tightened. His hands grabbed the sides of the mattress and held on as Kelly spread the lotion onto his balls and penis. Robert's erection had subsided with Kelly's surprise visit. Now, unnerved, naked, with the fully dressed Kelly sitting between his legs, inspecting him as he had watched her at the pool, worried about what he looked like, worried if he could get hard, worried she wouldn't think he was big enough, it completely went away. Kelly massaged the lotion onto him.
"It's okay, Robert. Let yourself go. Just relax. Just feel what I'm doing to you."
Robert closed his eyes and moved into his fantasy, his Kelly fantasy, her playing with him through the long nights, taking him over, tormenting him, loving him. Robert's body responded, and he felt himself growing in Kelly's hands. His head pressed back into the bed. His breathing became heavier. Kelly's fingers teased him, making him harder and harder until the skin on his penis was so tight it hurt.
"I've learned a bunch about this on the internet. Do you want me to tell you about it?"
Robert moaned.
"I'll take that for a yes."
Kelly moved into teacher mode.
"So this entire thing I'm stroking is your penis.
You got your erection because of blood flowing into it. I'm going to keep it hard for a while. At the end is the head of your penis."
Kelly's stroking hand held Robert while the index finger of her other hand twirled and tingled around the rim, sending an ache through his balls. His butt muscles clenched and unclenched in rhythm to the teasing finger.
"It's sensitive.
Like a girl's clit."
Kelly rolled her palm around the head. The stimulation became unbearable, and Robert's hips twisted to move away. His hand reached to stop hers.
Kelly paused.
"Put your hands up and grab the headboard and don't interfere." She waited until he complied.
"Okay. Let's continue. You're very sensitive just below, on the underside, and especially responsive to light and soft touches," Kelly demonstrated, "like this."
Robert's head pressed against his arm, trying to endure the stimulation. His hands pushed back and forth on the headboard. Kelly had said to keep them there. He was struggling to do that.
"I read repeated stimulation here will cause orgasm and ejaculation. Do you think that's true, Robert?"
Robert moaned, the bed squeaking.
"That's okay. You don't have to answer."
Kelly continued with light touches, mingled with occasional stroking of his whole penis. Robert's body shook as he got closer.
Kelly stopped.
Robert placed a hand on Kelly's and nudged her to start again. Kelly pushed it away and laid on top of him. Her weight pressed him into the bed. She squeezed his penis between her legs and rocked her hips. She nibbled and licked Robert's ears, softly murmured a secret into them, then covered them with her hands. Her mouth moved to his eyes, kissed them, licked his eyelids, and took away his sight. Her tongue worked into his mouth, and she was all he could taste. Her scent filled his mind. The heat of her on top of him pushed him into the bed. Kelly occupied all of Robert's senses. His world became small, it was now all Kelly. She consumed him. Then her mouth covered his, and she took his breath away. Kelly lay next to Robert. Her hand strayed down his chest, circled a nipple, moved to his stomach, and pelvis, then his penis. Her other hand worked under his ass into his balls. The center of his world was now where Kelly's hands were composedly engaged in sending jolts of lightning through him. Fast, slow, hard, light, he was panting, groaning, and whimpering as she played him like a sensual, musical instrument. Her fingers tickled his balls and skimmed up and down on the back of his cock. She had him breathing hard, like he was running a race. Every so often, to fully harden him, she would stroke his cock. Then she would return to the tickling. Over and over, tickling, stroking. Lighter and slower as he got closer. Ever closer, ever slower, she took him. His hips rocked to her strokes, then bucked as he lost control.
"Hold still," she said, "so I can work you over better."
"I can't."
He gasped.
"Next time, I'll tie you up." Robert turned toward Kelly, His hand reached for a button on her blouse. "How about if this time, we make love?" Kelly stopped him. Her hand gripped his fingers that were working the button. "Not this time. Kelly, you invite me over for dinner. You drive me crazy all night long with your foot." I can't believe Sam and Elaine didn't know what was going on. I kept dropping the silverware. That was pretty funny. "Then you come over here, then, this. Listen to me." I said, "Not this time." Robert frowned, his fingers fixed on Kelly's button. "Don't look so hurt. This isn't about you." "Of course it's about me. It's about us. Please. Give me some time." Kelly squeezed Robert's fingers. "Please." Robert didn't think Kelly ever used the word, "please." He released the button and lay back down. "That's better." Kelly started her instructing again, her hand knowingly stroking Robert's cock. "The orgasm I'm about to give you occurs in two phases, Robert, emission, and ejaculation. In emission, your semen is deposited near the top of your urethra. That's called ejaculatory inevitability, the point of no return." Robert's body stiffened. Kelly's hand made quick little strokes at the tip of his penis. His legs stretched out tight. His hips lifted as his balls, which Kelly was rubbing, tightened. His heart was pounding. He was panting like he was running a sprint. "That's where I have you now. You're coming now, whether or not you want to." Kelly jerked her hand off his cock and smirked. "And whether or not I stop." His hips heaved. He tried to beg, but his breath caught in his throat. He panicked. "No." His head pushed back into his pillow. "No." His hands desperately grabbed the bed, his eyes squeezed shut, his hips arched. His legs shot out. A cry escaped. His body convulsed. Pelvis pumping, penis muscles in rapid-fire contractions. Then Kelly reached out and stroked him, and he cried out as warm gobs hit his stomach and chest, and she drove him through it. His legs and arms were tight as drums, holding him off the bed. After a heartbeat or two, he shivered, his muscles relaxed, and he collapsed, sinking into the mattress. His breathing slowed. Kelly kissed Robert's cheeks and mouth. A peck here, a peck there on the unresponsive Robert. "I guess I don't have to describe ejaculation to you." Her hand played with his shoulder. After a while, Robert's arm reached around Kelly and held her and squeezed her. "I wasn't expecting that. You enjoyed it, right?" Robert rubbed Kelly's back. "It was incredible." He chuckled. "You learned all that on the internet?" Kelly smiled. "Maybe. The whole evening. Your foot, this. Why? What's changed your mind about me? You trying to rescue me at dinner? I'm not sure I was all that helpful. I kept trying to change the subject, but whatever it was, Sam made it vulgar. I feel bad about how he talked in front of you. That's Sam. I had a different image of what he would be like. A supporter of the arts." Robert chuckled. A soft-spoken, bi-spectacled, smoking-jacketed college professor was the look I was going for. "That's not Sam." "No. He's not like anyone I've known before." "Well, to know him is not to love him. Did you mean what you said after dinner, that we're having a relationship? Isn't that what you've wanted? Since I met you. But after the swimming pool, and you're not answering my calls, and parading Travis in front of me, I figured it was never going to happen." "It can happen if you want it to. You said if I wanted to be with you, I needed to learn to swim in deep water. What about that? It's winter time. Let's worry about that next summer." "I think you meant more than swimming." "Well, I like guys willing to take a chance, who live on the edge, break a few rules."
"Like Travis?"
"Yeah, like him. But he's such a jerk. I told you he's out of the picture. You have potential, though. Except you're so full of rules, I expect you'd break if you broke any of them. So I left home and was a vagabond for a couple of years. Hey, I'm a porn artist. Doesn't that count for something?" Kelly giggled. "That's what I said. You show some promise, and I guess I can work with that. I don't think I'll ever be enough for you. They were silent for a while. A gust of wind rattled the window. Robert shifted in his bed. "This is a little hard for me." Kelly grinned and patted Robert's groin. "So soon, I thought I already took care of that." Robert took and held Kelly's hand. "No, not that. Can we be serious for a moment?"
"I'm all about serious."
"Go for it. Us having a relationship now is difficult because I've decided I'm leaving."
"What? Why?"
"I liked my vagabond life. Sure, I was living hand to mouth, but I was doing the art I wanted. I was free, and I was doing what I wanted. Now I'm living in this cage. I'm not free, I'm still poor, and I'm dealing with subjects I'm not proud of. Sam said I was doing porn. I called it what, exotic art? Well, Sam is right." Robert sat up. "I guess I felt some loyalty to him. My patron. Humphrey, I thought if I could talk with him, he would have me doing some real art. I didn't understand how much money meant to him. Sam owns the damn place, and he owns me. He owns a lot of damn places and a lot of damn people. I won't stay under his thumb." Kelly curled next to Robert. "Life would be easier if he wasn't around."
"Mine sure would be, at least.
I've got to get out of here."
"What about us?"
"So what about us? Until tonight I didn't know there was an us. You refused my phone calls, you touted Travis around me.
You.
We've already covered that. You need to listen to me. I'm here now.
Didn't I just prove that?
You didn't want to make love.
Would you please get over that, at least for now?
I'm working through some stuff.
Kelly, I could get over that.
Normally.
I think, but my being here is not normal. I'm not even sure why I'm here, or why I got invited. And after I met Sam, this is so tough.
Listen, I've made up my mind.
Do you always run away when things get tough?
Life's hard enough.
I don't need Sam to make it worse.
I'm better off out of here and without him.
Are you better off without me?
Do you always take off when a relationship gets complicated?
Robert looked out the window. The wind was picking up, rattling the window.
I think a storm is coming.
You're breaking up with me, aren't you?
Kelly, there's nothing to break.
We really don't have a relationship.
Not if you run away.
They held each other for a while, then Kelly asked, "Where would you go?"
"I don't know. I just know I'm out of here."
Kelly pushed Robert back down onto the bed and wrapped her legs and arms around him.
"Well, I don't think I'll let you go."
Chapter 10. Sam pays a visit.
"I'm going to kill that son of a bitch."
Robert was in the kitchen, washing dishes after breakfast when the threat came booming through the house. He rushed toward the front door as Sam barged in, a winter storm and a distraught Kelly trailing behind. Robert's brain went into overdrive. His thoughts, in the following order, but almost simultaneously were, Sam is in the same disheveled clothing he had on at dinner. Barging in must be a family trait. Sam found out what Kelly and I did last night. He's going to kill me. That final thought stayed in Robert's mind as Sam charged at him like a bull moose.
"You son of a bitch, Kelly told me you're using photographs of her to paint your goddamn nudes."
Sam came to within a couple of feet of Robert. "I'm going to break every one of your goddamn fingers.
You'll never paint again."
Sam paused. Robert was still holding a kitchen knife he had been washing.
"I should call some guys and have you taken care of.
I should get my lawyers to sue your ass."
Kelly stood off to the side.
"I don't think he was breaking any laws. I'm over 18.
Sam continued to glare at Robert.
"Invasion of privacy, he's a goddamn peeping Tom for Christ's sake. I think I'll just beat the shit out of you."
Kelly raised her voice.
Sam was never very good at hearing her.
I knew what he was doing.
Sam turned toward Kelly, "Stay out of this.
I wanted him to."
Sam took a step, "I'll take care of you later."
Kelly backed up.
Robert was relieved Sam's anger was diverted from him, but now Kelly had to bear it.
Sam scowled.
"A man sins, a man pays."
Kelly was crying angry tears.
"You're the one talking about paying for sin?"
Sam's eyes pierced Kelly. God's vengeance will find us all. Robert put his arms up, pleading.
Mr. Gallo, it was me, not Kelly. Blame me.
Sam glowered at Robert and gestured with his head. Put that knife down, and maybe we can talk about it. Robert hadn't realized he still had the knife in his hand. He walked over to the table by the window, put it down, and turned to look at Sam.
Robert is not a quick thinker under pressure. All he could think of to say was, "Sir, if it helps, since I've been using Kelly's photos, my paintings are more popular. So more assholes are gawking at her. How is that supposed to help?
Kelly knows Sam. They're making more money." Sam strolled over to the door and looked out. Snow was piling up on the patio.
Robert walked over to Kelly.
"Kelly, I'm sorry I took those pictures. I'm sorry if I hurt you."
Kelly nudged Robert and leaned against him. They both watched Sam.
Sam turned around to face them.
"My Kelly tells me you're thinking of leaving. That's not gonna happen. You owe me. I haven't gotten to where I am without taking advantage of opportunities, those I created, and those that just came around. This one seems to have just come around."
Sam stalked up to Robert.
"Here's the deal. I said you needed a live model so your paintings wouldn't look like shit. So, you're going to use my Kelly."
Robert's eyes widened. "You were about to break my fingers for taking pictures of your daughter, and now you want her to pose for me?"
Sam poked Robert's chest with his fingers.
"On my terms.
Here's the rules.
1, you touch her, and I kill you.
Got that, pal?"
"Yes, sir."
2, this stays as a business between you two. You're the artist. She's the model. There's not going to be any other relationship.
Got that?"
"Yes, sir."
Sam put his face up to Robert's.
"No hanky-panky."
Robert nodded his head quickly in assent.
3, you don't tell no one she's your model.
Got that?"
"Yes, sir."
"I don't want a bunch of sons of bitches laughing at me while they're ogling paintings of my Kelly."
"No, sir."
Sam gave Robert a dirty look.
"Yes, sir. I understand.
I don't remember what number, but here it is, you pay me 50%, off the top, of everything you get for a painting that has my Kelly in it."
Kelly had been wiping tears from her eyes.
She looked up.
"So, you're going to sell me?"
Sam turned toward Kelly.
"I make money off all my assets. You and your mother have bled me for years. It's time you pay something back.
You pranced around with almost no clothing on for this son of a bitch for free, so now you can prance with no clothes for money."
"Sir, the gallery already takes 50%.
If you do too, that leaves me with nothing," Robert said.
"Nothing's what you deserve, son of a bitch. I know what the gallery gets.
You're going to get nothing. I'll keep you fed and let you continue to live here.
That's it."
"Sir, Mr. Gallo. I'm really confused on how I even ended up here.
I appreciate it, all you've done for me. But I think it would be better if I leave.
You owe me.
I thought it was a gift, you and Mrs. Gallo helping the arts.
You're a patron of the arts.
I'm a patron of me.
You cost me money, now you pay me back.
You've been here for about 8 months.
So you stay for 8 months, and I get my percentage off you."
Robert's eyes teared up.
"That's not fair.
Your choice, my deal, or you're out of here."
Robert's voice was breaking.
"That's what I want, out of here.
You leave, and you'll leave with broken fingers."
Robert clenched his jaw, his hands squeezed in tight fists.
"You got 3 seconds, either you're working for me, or you're never working again."
If Robert had tried to talk, all that he could have managed was sniffling.
He bowed his head.
"Good choice."
Sam opened the door and turned as he was leaving. He yelled to be heard over the storm.
"Congratulations, pal. Your world has just changed."
After Sam left, Robert turned toward Kelly, his eyes still full of frustration tears.
"Why did you tell him about the photographs?"
"He guessed at it this morning and confronted me.
I'm scared of him. I just blurted it out."
Robert looked away.
Kelly put her hand up to Robert's face and turned it to her.
"Look, I'm sorry. Okay? I didn't know what else to do.
Robert walked over to the table, wiped his eyes with his sleeve, and stared out the window.
Maybe you should have stood up to him.
Kelly sat down at the table.
Let me tell you a story about Sam. When he was younger and just starting out, he would work under the table for cash. One night he was leaving a worksite, just having been paid, and a guy comes up to him and points a gun at him.
Give me your money.
Sam pulls out a gun and points it at the man. They're both within 3 feet of each other.
The man fires.
He misses.
Probably surprised or panicked.
Sam fires back.
He misses.
The man runs away.
The police must have been nearby.
They show up before Sam can run off as well.
They're looking at charging him with several violations.
They ask him why he just didn't give the guy the money.
Sam told them, if that son of a bitch wants my money, he'll have to work for it as hard as I did.
They didn't charge him.
Kelly looked up at Robert.
See?
He's a scary guy.
So, why didn't you stand up to him and turn down that terrible deal he made you?
Robert sat down.
He's a scary guy.
Kelly put her hand on top of Robert's.
At least we don't have to hide anymore.
Yeah, well, I guess I was the one doing the hiding.
Robert put his other hand on Kelly's.
Why did you let me keep taking pictures of you?
It was a little exciting.
Strolling around with not much on, knowing I was turning you on.
Kelly massaged Robert's hand with hers.
I was, wasn't I?
Robert looked at their hands, smiled, and nodded, then looked up at Kelly.
Sam said he would deal with you later.
What does that mean?
He has his ways.
It's okay. I've learned to live with it.
But life would be simpler if he wasn't around.
He's not going anywhere.
How come you told him I was thinking of leaving?
I don't know. It just came out while he was yelling at me.
He was throwing the pictures at me, telling me I was a slut.
And I said, you won't have to worry about that anymore, he's leaving.
Kelly got up and stood in front of Robert and put her hands around the back of his neck.
Are you still thinking of leaving?
She was wearing her lotion.
Its fragrance had filled Robert's room for so many nights, including last night.
I was before, and now even more with that deal he forced on me.
With Sam, a deal's a deal.
The only way out of it now is to kill him.
Who said anything about killing?
I just don't want to work under his conditions.
You still don't understand.
You can't leave now.
Sam meant what he said.
Robert didn't respond.
If you go, he'll take it out on me.
Well, I don't want that.
It wasn't your fault.
It was mine. Robert gently massaged the knuckles on his hands.
Maybe I do owe him.
Kelly took Robert's hands and placed them on her breasts.
Will you stay for me?
If I stay, would he still take it out on you?
Probably not.
He'd have gotten what he wanted.
I guess if I stay, I'll at least get to eat and have a place to live.
Kelly pressed Robert's hands.
And me?
You'd have me.
Kelly put her mouth close so Robert could feel her lips moving over his ear.
I want you to stay.
She kissed his ear.
Please.
Then she put her hands on each side of Robert's head and held his gaze.
Robert nodded.
Kelly bounced back and clapped her hands.
So when do we start?
I guess tomorrow.
A gust of wind hit the door as Kelly opened it, almost blowing it out of her hands.
She swung around as she stepped out.
Thanks for trying to rescue me again.
She turned and left before Robert could respond.
Chapter 11. Modeling.
The storm that started yesterday had turned into a Midwestern blizzard.
It closed the city down, so there would be no work today.
Robert was sitting at his table, watching the storm, and having his morning coffee.
Kelly tracked in.
So, you and Sam think I should pose nude for you?
She closed the door and stomped her feet a couple of times to knock snow off her boots.
It occurred to me that despite your voyeuristic hobby last summer, except in your sordid little mind, you've never seen me naked.
I thought I'd take care of that minor issue.
She stepped toward Robert and brushed snow off the snowsuit she was wearing.
I have 3 pieces of clothing on.
She looked down and slipped her foot out of one of her boots.
Her foot was bare. She looked at Robert and smiled.
Now, I have two. Kelly took a couple of steps toward Robert, put her arms out for balance, and using her bare foot against the heel of the other boot, slid her foot out.
Now, I have one. Kelly unzipped the top of her suit, exposing her skin and bare breasts. She pulled an arm out of one sleeve, then the other, held the suit to her for a moment, and slid it down to her waist. Kelly kept the suit on her hips for a moment, then lifted her arms and wiggled her hips until it dropped to the floor. She stepped out of the crumpled suit and looked up at Robert, amused.
Now, I have none. Kelly sashayed up to a feverish Robert and stood so close he felt the warmth of her breath.
So you think you can handle this?
Kelly brushed past Robert and strode toward the studio.
Come on, pal, let's get to work.
Inside the studio, Kelly turned around to face Robert.
So, what are you going to do with me now that you have me all naked and alone?
Kelly hugged her shoulders.
The first thing you need to do is turn up the heat.
My nipples are getting hard.
Robert was not feeling cold, but he knew he had to gain some control.
Kelly had completely taken over.
Here, put this shirt on.
You should wear it when you're not posing.
Kelly smiled. You've got a naked girl in your room, and you want her to put clothes on?
Kelly looked at the inside collar of the shirt.
It's got your name on it.
That's from the dry cleaner where I used to live. He was an old guy, and that's the system he used to keep everyone's laundry straight.
Robert nodded toward the shirt.
Could you put the shirt on, please?
And we need some rules.
Kelly put the shirt on.
She didn't button the front.
Rules?
What rules?
Robert didn't need to make them up on the fly. He dragged them out, ready-made from the bag he bore with him. They had always kept him in good stead and at a safe distance. He regularly reminded the models at the porn store of them.
We need to keep this professional.
What we do in here is separate from outside. Separate from our personal lives together.
Kelly sat down on the table.
We don't have any personal lives together.
Robert stared at Kelly's fingers that were playing with the buttons on the shirt.
I thought we did.
Remember? After what happened a couple of nights ago.
Remember?
Yeah, I remember.
I remember you said you were leaving.
Then yesterday, I agreed to stay to be with you.
To protect you from Sam.
You're staying so Sam doesn't break your fingers.
You think that's it?
You don't know me very well.
Oh, I know you very well.
If you weren't afraid of Sam, you'd run away from here like you run away from everything and everyone else when things get hard or complicated.
Robert went to his easel and moved it a couple of feet, scraping the floor, looked at it a moment, then moved it back.
Okay.
That's fine. He picked up a paintbrush, twirled it in his fingers, and threw it back down.
Never mind.
Second.
What's first?
Keep this professional.
Robert was frustrated.
He added a brand new rule, just for Kelly.
Second.
I will let you know when to come over.
You can't show up whenever you want.
And you certainly must knock before coming in.
I don't understand what it is with you and your family.
You all stroll in like you own the place.
We do.
I wouldn't walk into your place without knocking.
No, you'd probably be shot.
Kelly turned her head and looked at Robert out of the corners of her eyes.
I guess you could shoot me with your gun if I walked in here without knocking.
That caught Robert off guard.
He was ashamed of that gun, more than the lotion he masturbated with.
He kept both hidden in the drawer by his bed, first his underwear and socks, beneath that the jar of lotion, then gun, in the very back of the drawer.
He didn't know how to respond.
How did Kelly know about the gun?
He continued.
Third, I'll determine what poses you need to take.
Some may be risque.
I'll decide.
You'll need to do what I tell you.
Kelly took off Robert's shirt and held it in front of her.
Sam sold me to you.
So, I guess you can do whatever you want with me.
She tossed him the shirt.
Do you have any more rules?
Robert tossed it back to her.
No, that about does it.
Kelly dropped the shirt on the table, then twisted to look at the post behind her.
Robert looked at her shoulder.
Do you have any pets?
Not anymore.
Why? You have some scratches on your back. It looks like a cat or something clawed at you.
Kelly turned around.
Well, just do my good side, my front.
Robert directed Kelly to a pose. She sat on the table, one leg bent underneath her, the other leg down toward the floor. He was nervous.
The unknown, hated artist had Kelly on this table, just as he now had her.
She was naked for him then, just as she now was for him.
Compliant for him, just.
Robert moved his easel again and adjusted some lighting.
Can you scrunch down a little further?
Scrunch down?
Scrunch what?
You know.
What?
There's some light showing from under you, squish down your bottom.
My bottom?
What are you talking about?
Your bottom.
Lean forward and press it down more on the table.
My vagina?
Is that what you mean?
Robert blushed.
Kelly tilted her head, smiling.
I call it my pussy.
Can you say pussy?
That's not what I call it.
No.
Let me hear you say it.
Come on, this is silly.
Say it.
Say pussy.
Pussy, 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 pussy.
Kelly was laughing. Come on, say it.
Oh shit.
Okay, pussy.
Kelly clapped her hands.
Okay, I'll squish my bottom down for you.
Robert grinned and picked out some tubes of paint.
Okay.
What do you call what I have?
Kelly didn't miss a beat, your penis.
Your manhood.
Come on, you can do better than that.
Willy, cock, dick, dong, junk.
Shaft, louvave muscle.
Louvave stick.
Pecker, prick, rod, wiener.
Kelly was having a wonderful time.
I could go on.
I'm sure you could.
What do you call it?
Robert snorted, my big hammer.
Kelly stared at him, her eyes widened. She was in an immense struggle to keep her mouth shut, her cheeks bulged, she erupted, laughing so hard snot blew out her nose.
Robert could no longer contain himself.
He bent over, holding his sides.
Eventually, he blurted out, come on.
It's not that funny.
Which sent Kelly into another fit of hysterics.
Kelly picked up Robert's shirt and wiped her nose and eyes, and suppressed several more giggles.
When Kelly could talk, she asked,
okay, Mr. Hammer, when are you going to nail me?
Robert was wiping tears from his eyes.
What are you talking about?
Kelly leaned back on the table.
What do you think?
So, now we're back together?
What do you want?
What about Sam's rules?
You touch her, I kill you.
I kind of remember that one.
He can't see us in here.
Besides, he's in the city.
The storm will keep him at bay until tonight.
I told you, I like guys who live on the edge.
Breaking rules makes it more exciting.
Robert didn't respond and focused on mixing paint on his palette.
You're a funny guy.
A nerd who does porn, no.
No, actually, that's not unusual. Nerds are into porn.
You're a prude who creates porn and is embarrassed to say vagina.
You do paintings of naked girls in all kinds of nasty situations, and your face gets all red when you say pussy.
I need to figure you out.
I have to make a living.
I just do what they tell me to.
You need to break some rules.
I need to work on you.
Well, work is what we need to do.
I have a deadline to meet.
Okay, for now.
Me model, you painter.
We'll be great together.
We'll knock their socks off, or at least their pants.
Kelly turned on the table, her back to Robert.
Do me, Robert.
What?
Kelly laid down on the table and stretched her head toward the floor.
Paint me.
And Robert did as Kelly directed.
Chapter 12.
Janie.
Through the rest of the winter and into spring, Kelly modeled, and Robert painted and photographed her.
Robert's rule number 2, I will let you know when to come over, had been ignored since the day Robert set it out. Kelly came over whenever she felt like it.
Robert's rule 3, you'll have to do what I tell you, had been dead on arrival.
Robert would have liked to rescind rule 1, keep this professional.
That was the only one Kelly kept.
She liked to tell Robert stories while she was posing, partly because she was bored, somewhat to tease him, but mainly to regulate the sexuality in the room, which Kelly endeavored to keep at a high pitch. Her stories were better than most of those Robert was illustrating from the professional writers. Stories that mingled with and added to the fantasies he used at night. As he listened to her, his paints, brushes, and canvases faded from sight. He would lose focus, he would lose concentration, he would get hard. Like when he was in junior high school and bored and not paying attention in class. It was at those moments, it seemed, the teacher called on him to stand and explain part of the lesson. Kelly smirked. She liked that part. One day, Kelly was standing behind Robert, watching him finish a painting. She whispered in his ear. I was telling my friend, Janie, about what we're doing. You better watch out. I think she's a little resentful of you. Oh yeah, who's Jamie? Janie, she's a girl. So why would a girlfriend of yours be resentful of me? We kinda have a thing.
A thing?
What do you mean?
Your lovers?
Is sex all you think about?
That's pretty much what your stories are all about.
Well, this is different. She's my best friend. She's like a sister. I'm an only child, Robert said. I'm not sure what that means. It means there is no one I'm closer to. No one I love more, and no one I fight with more. We compete against each other all the time. I met her at the cottage when I was 12. It was in the fall. Sam and Elaine wanted to get the cottage ready for the winter. As usual, they left me alone, so I went out hiking through the woods. I first met her there. I saw her going to and fro in a small clearing. She was alone too. I went up to her. Hi, what are you doing? She said, I'm walking up and down in the garden. So, I'm Kelly. What's your name? I asked. I don't have a name, she said. But that's silly. You have to have a name. Everyone has a name, I told her. Then you name me, she said. All right, I'll call you Janie. How did you decide on that name? Robert asked. I don't know, it just came to me. It seemed like a good enough name. When you name someone, you own them, she said. They become yours. God had Adam name all the animals, then he gave him dominion over them. I tried to be helpful. Sam renames the properties he buys. He puts his name on them. Gallo Galleria, Gallo Towers, Gallo Golf Course. Janie said that was obnoxious. I tried again. Like when parents name their kids, then the kids belong to them. Like that, she said. Now you own me. We started talking. It was like we had known each other our entire lives. She's nothing like me. Opposites attract, you know. She's deliberate, disciplined, and dominant, nothing bothers her, and no one gets to her. We hit it off right away. Robert had to interject. I don't see that's opposite of you. You just described yourself to a T. That's how you see me? Do you want to start with the dominant part? Okay. Maybe not my opposite, maybe more of me. But oh yeah. So much more. There was an old deserted cabin off in the woods. Sam hadn't seen it yet, or he would have torn it down. For the next couple of summers, we'd meet there talking about everything. Friends, neither of us had any. Family, mine were rotten, Janie didn't remember hers. Boys. Okay. That's what we mainly talked about. By the time I was 14, we wanted to do more than just talk about boys. Janie and I would practice what it would be like to be with a boy. Sometimes Janie would be the boy and practice on me, and sometimes I'd be the boy and practice on her. But most of the time, she was the boy. She had said I owned her, but she had a game she enjoyed playing to show me differently. You have to trust someone before you let them tie you up. They can do anything to you, and you can't stop them. You're supposed to discuss something like that, agree on what's okay and what isn't. Have a safe word. Janie didn't care about any of that. I'm going to tickle you now, she'd say. Robert interrupted, okay. Now I got it. This is another one of your sex fantasy stories. Kelly moved to stand between Robert and the easel he was painting on. She put her hands on his shoulders and shook her head.
Oh, no. Please. I tell her. You know how ticklish I am.
Of course she knew. She'd instruct me to remove my clothes and get on the bed. She'd bring out cuffs, special ones that would leave no marks, and ropes she had purchased, and order me to spread out my arms and legs and try to touch the bedposts. I'd close my eyes. I would already be breathing hard. I knew what I was in for. Then she'd tie me down. Watching her hands come near me would start me giggling and tugging at my binds before she'd even touch me. I'd struggle, whimpering and pleading, twisting to pull my arms down to protect my sides. "Don't laugh," she would say, "or I win." She'd touch me and make me jerk, then walk her fingers up and down my sides, starting me to wiggle and twitch. I'd panic as she'd keep on. I knew I was losing, and she was just getting started. I'd fight it, try not to give in. I didn't want her to win, so I would clench my jaw and squinch my eyes shut tight. But then she would burrow her fingers into my sides and under my arms, and I'd buck and erupt into hysterics. After she had broken me, she liked to tickle my feet, grazing the bottoms with her fingers. Up and down, driving me into a frenzy. It was like little bolts of electricity running from her hands, through my feet, and up my legs. I could feel her fingers in my vagina. "You win. You win." I'd cry. "Please stop." "Oh, it's not about winning," she'd say, "that was always a given. I'll always win. This is so you will remember that." She'd get a chair and sit at the foot of the bed. "I might as well be comfortable. I'm going to be here for a while." I knew I was in for a long afternoon. The cabin was dark and dank, but she would work me over until I was sweating and exhausted. Every so often she'd let me rest. "So you don't pass out." Then she'd start on me again. Sometimes she'd have me fixed down so tight I could only pound my head on the mattress. It was the only part of me I could move. Other times she'd cuff my hands behind my back, so I would buck and thrash on the bed. She'd tell me, "I have to be careful I don't overdo you. This is how the Chinese torture their prisoners. I could kill you this way." Kelly looked at Robert, her eyes wide. "That's hard to believe, but I suppose you could if you kept at them. I mean, what if you didn't stop? That'd be insane." Robert had been listening intently to Kelly's story. "That would be insane. Janie's into games that could kill you?" The tickle torture game was the only one she played with me. But she was fascinated with the strange ways people died. Voodoo death, for instance, was one of her favorites. Sometimes people are found in the morning, dead with no visible cause. Like they suffocated. They're just dead. Imagine, someone goes into their hut at night, lays down, and in the morning they're dead. She wondered how to make that into a game. "I studied that a little at college," Robert joined in. "It's called psychogenic death. It's brought on by a strong emotional shock. It's psychosomatic in that death is caused by an emotional response, fear, to some real or imagined outside force. It's seen mainly in native societies, and concentration and prisoner of war camps, but it can happen anywhere. No one knows how it happens. Janie knows." Robert looked questionably at Kelly. "Janie said, God got tired of them, so he put out his hand and took their breath away." Kelly took hold of Robert's arms. "When she'd finish with me, I'd collapse like a little rag doll. Sometimes, while I was still quivering, she would reward me. I'd come so hard, over and over and over. Sometimes, she wouldn't reward me and make me wait to play the game again. Once I told her I didn't want to play the game anymore. Stop. Stop. Please stop. She said she liked the game and didn't want to stop. Then, I told her to leave me alone. She told me she would never leave me. Then, I told her I didn't like her anymore. She said that was okay, she didn't like me anymore either. Then, I told her to go away. She said, no. And she never has." Chapter 13. She was learning. Halfway between the carriage house that Robert lived in and the shop in the city where he worked was a small neighborhood bar. It served pretty good sandwiches, so at lunchtime, Blue-collared workers and white-shirted salesmen would gather to eat and have a drink or two to help them get through the rest of the day. After work, before heading home for dinner, the same would be there for a drink or so to help get through the night. Other than at lunch or after work, there were half a dozen regulars who spent their time there just trying to get through. The place had no windows, so only interior lamps provided any lighting. It didn't matter if it was day or night, it was all the same dim place. When first entering, one was greeted with the smell of stale beer. It was here, in between lunch and dinner, that Robert and Manny met. Manny Greens was one of the porn shop's regular writers. Robert's porn dealer had selected Robert to illustrate Manny's stories. The two had conspired on several other works. Today's meeting was to discuss illustrations for Manny's next series, all with the initial title, Naked in the Jungle. There would be, Naked in the Jungle, Sheila Does the Pygmies, Naked in the Jungle, Sheila Does the Giants, Naked in the Jungle, Sheila Does the Pirates, and so on. Sheila would continue doing someone, and there would continue to be sequels as long as anyone was willing to buy them. Manny was at the bar when Robert arrived. He was 40 years older than Robert, add 10 more for too much drinking and not enough sleep. If it had been allowed in the bar, he would have been smoking a cigarette. Manny was not the introverted type of writer. He was loud, outgoing, and personable, at times a tad boisterous. But then again, he was a writer of porn. So was Hemingway, loud, boisterous. "Hey there, kid." Manny called people younger than himself, kid. It saved him from having to try and remember their names. "You still drinking scotch?" He did remember what people drank. He ordered one for Robert and another rye on ice for himself. Manny described the new series and his vision for it. "In some of the scenes, we're going to have a gorilla. That's going to be Sheila's sidekick, her trusty companion. There's to be a slight hint that there's something more going on between them. We may try to work that into later stories. But right now, bestiality isn't popular, so keep that on the back burner. Also, our demographics show women are getting more into porn, so have the gorilla look like a Greek Adonis. Give it a big cock. Naked, right?" Robert didn't think he needed that clarified but wanted to have some part of the conversation. "That's the name of the series, kid. Keep the monkey face? Keep the monkey face. This is a jungle story." Manny patted Robert on the shoulder. "We make a good team, kid. After this series, I have ideas for a lot more." Robert faked a groan that was close to his true feelings. "Oh, good, so we have more to look forward to. 36. I can hardly wait." Manny had a sparkle in his eye. "One, if you don't count the porn." "One? I think I'd like to hear about the one." Manny turned to Robert and looked intensely at him. "Have you ever read Deuteronomy or Joshua? Those are in the Bible, right?" "No, I've never read the Bible, but I've heard some of the stories. There are great spectacles in there. Not those Hollywood bups where they put a biblical name on a film as an excuse to show half-naked dancing girls and everyone walking around in togas. No. I'm talking about real life, something with meaning, with soul. That's what I was writing. You heard about the story of Jericho? Sure, there were trumpets blown, and the walls came down. Doesn't get better than that." Manny toasted and commenced an enthusiastic rendition for the benefit of the other three patrons, whose faces were familiar, but whose names were unremembered. "Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho. Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho. And the walls come tumbling down." He sang it a couple more times, then turned to Robert. "You know what happened after the walls came down? We went in there and smote every man, woman, and child in the city, slaughtered them all except for a friendly hooker. Now, does that have the makings of a great story or what? So what's with the we?" Robert asked. "I know you work Saturdays, and I've seen you chowing down on the free pork sandwiches when those are put out for the film crew. My family name used to be Greenspun. My parents changed it to Greens. They figured it would help in their escape from Germany, also to being accepted in America. Neither of which was a sure thing at the beginning of World War II. Sorry, I didn't mean anything. No problem. It's all in the heart, kid. It's the story of my people. Think of what it must have been like in that caravan, the people as they left the desert, the excitement, the expectation as they traveled into a new land, our promised land. Manny jabbed his finger in the air. The army marching ahead, cymbals clanging, war drums beating, trumpets blaring, walls falling before us. We were conquerors. Other nations trembled at our name. What's your story titled? Don't screw with the Jew. Robert grinned. You might rethink that if you want it to be a bestseller. It's the working title. So, how long have you been working on it? 30 years. Must be a long story. Yeah, well, stuff happens. So, what happened? Hey, writing is hard work. Even the throwaway porn stuff I do. It's not like your art, kid. It's hard work. It takes all your time and attention and drains your blood from you. Crap. Your stories are all formula. Whether pygmies, giants, or pirates, they all have throbbing cocks the size of large cucumbers, and Sheila's clit is always going to be trembling in anticipation because whoever's cock it is, pirate, giant, or pygmy, it's the biggest she's ever seen. Okay, okay, okay. Everybody has their own shtick. But it's still hard work. When I started it, I knew I had a bestseller. Reviews would be written in the New Yorker, a Pulitzer even. Manny shrugged. Then, I dropped it. Robert was still upset at the comment Manny made about his art. You copped out. Have you ever been married, kid? No, no, I know you haven't. So it's like when you're in a relationship. Your first draft, everything is fun. You're writing whatever comes into your mind, free, a thought comes, go there, can we do that? I don't know, let's try. We'll worry about it later. Then you move in together, your second draft. It's not so much fun anymore. You have to tighten up what you have. Correct some of the stuff you did in the first draft. You start to watch what you say, you clean up your language. You begin to wonder, is this going anywhere? You question if there's some story, some purpose in it. Then you get married, the third draft. Nothing is right. Criticism all over the place. Her subject didn't agree with my verbs. Sex, Robert. There's no sex. Your participles dangle, and infinity is splitting. Sitting in a little cubicle, the marriage flounders. Can you correct all that? Do you want to flounderingly go on? At some point, you have to recognize when you've had enough. You've done everything you can with your story, and there ain't no more. There's not another draft in you. Robert raised his glass to Manny. Writers are never done. You guys always have another draft. All your work, time, attention, and blood, and you're done? How can you know that? How do you know when you're just done? You've fed it, cared for it, taken it to bed with you. Then you realize it's a slut who came for the night and stayed a year. You're married to it. After a while, it feels stale. You're tired looking at it. You put it in a drawer for a couple of months. When you take it back out, you still can't stand the sight of her. That's when you know you're done. How many times you've been married, Manny? I'm on my third. Manny finished his drink and motioned the bartender for a refill. Kind of funny. A marriage counselor with 2 divorces and 3 marriages. You're a marriage counselor? For 10 years. Manny looked at Robert. Yeah, I was for real, kid. Graduate degree, some honors, nice little practice in the suburbs. But you're not still doing that? Not for 25 years. What happened? I got bored, tired, and my mind was turning to mush. So what else was there to do? I did porn. Reading and using at first, later, creating. I did marriage counseling during the day and wrote porn at night. I was good at the porn. It won out. My first story was banned in Boston when that really meant something. I lost my license. But at least I have a steady income. There will always be porn. Manny toasted the other patrons. Here's to porn. The two who heard him raise their glasses. I remember when Playboy would come out. We'd wait for it each month. It would be hidden away behind the counter in a bookstore, so you had to ask the clerk for it. That was always a little embarrassing. You'd go when there was a guy clerk. Too embarrassing to ask a girl for it, she'd look at you knowing what you were going to do when you got home. I always thought I'd catch a smirk on the clerk's face as he handed it to me. It would be in a brown paper sack. He was probably selling me his used copy. You'd get home and sneak it in the door. That night and for the next week, Ms. Whatever month it was kept your attention up. She wasn't as much fun the second week. By the third, you were looking around to see what else you had. The fourth was waiting for the next issue. Manny patted Robert's shoulder. See what I mean? There's all kinds of sex, missionary, girl on top, girl-girl, guy-guy, girl-monkey, I'm not judging. After all, what's porn? Just something naked people do that you don't. But what it all has in common is one thing, variety. Whatever it is you're into, you want more. That's where we come in. The shop is more than a simple porn store. It's a porn factory, turning out a product for an insatiable clientele. And it's all run by Sam Gallo. We're always going to have employment. Robert shook his head. I've been involved in this for a year now. It isn't something I want to be doing for the rest of. The door opened, sending a glare of sunlight through the dim room, reminding everyone it was broad daylight outside, and they were spending it sitting inside a dark bar. The regular came in. The door shut, and they all went back to the dreariness of their purposeless lives. My life. And I sure as hell don't want to be working for Sam Gallo. Kid, you want out? Get out now. Or next year you'll be thinking the same thing, and the next year, and the next. Suddenly, it's 30 years later, and you've stopped thinking. The porn gets into you. I don't know, maybe if I got away from the porn, my old story wouldn't look so bad. Do you think Sam would come after me? I still owe him 4 months. He said he'd break my fingers. Nah. You're small fry. He's not going to spend a lot of time looking for you. Just don't take Kelly, and he'll leave you alone. Why do you think I'd take Kelly? Because you have a thing for her. Oh, bullshit, why do you think so? How could you tell? When you started painting over her interesting parts. I did some tasteful nudes. Tasteful doesn't describe our customers. Nabokov started off with a nice little porn story. But he kept adding to it until it became unrecognizable and unreadable. Lolita is considered one of the literary masterpieces of the 20th century. I'm not saying Nabokov was a schmuck, but do you know how many copies of that book we sold? I'd guess none. Zero, nothing, nada. We stopped stocking it. No one wants an intellectual porn story. Robert chuckled. Okay. I do like Kelly, yeah, I like her a lot. I ache when she's not around, and she's frustrating as hell when she is. I understand that about women, kid. At least I used to. With Kelly, I could see something was going on. When you and I first started working together, you were, if I was still in the business of diagnosing, depressed. Then Kelly comes back at the end of the summer, and you do an about-face. She got to you real quick. You were almost human again. Then you're down in the dumps, then up. She took you on a roller coaster ride then, and she still is. I worry about you. Worry? What are you talking about? Isn't every relationship a crazy ride? And sure, Kelly drives me nuts, and we have a crazy relationship. And she has this crazy make-believe girlfriend, Janie. But she's crazy, and I use that term unprofessionally, is how she, let me be careful here, overwhelmed you. No. Infatuated? No. That's not a strong enough word. Bewitched. Yes, bewitched you. She's a good-looking girl, so if it was sex, I'd get that. Manny glanced at Robert. You're not having sex with her, right? None of your business. Yeah, that's what I thought, no sex. Which makes her hold on you harder to explain. Can't a guy have a normal relationship with a girl, without sex being involved? No. Robert looked out of the corners of his eyes at Manny. Manny leaned toward Robert.
No, I said. Sex is always involved.
Guy, girl, no sex. Doesn't happen.
Then he leaned back.
Listen, I've known Kelly since Sam adopted her when she was, what, 7 or 8? I've been to their house. Watched her grow up. I know her.
Kid, listen to me.
I know her.
Kelly's not what you think she is.
Robert was not enjoying this conversation. He wanted to keep it light.
She keeps life interesting.
Kid, there's an old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times.
Kelly is not my curse.
Before Kelly, you were dealing with things pretty well, despite your depression. You didn't get snagged in the porn and go crazy with the models. You had some standards.
The girls called it Robert's rules of respectability. Keep this professional, don't try to screw them.
The girls thought it was weird.
They'd laugh.
Robert sat back.
They'd laugh at me?
No, no.
Not at you, well, okay, at you.
The other photographers and artists, the ones who aren't gay, were always trying to get in their pants.
You'd hold them off.
I guess your mother taught you better.
Robert slammed his glass on the table.
My mother didn't teach me anything.
Sorry, kid.
I understand your dad raised you.
From the few things you've said about your mother, I should have guessed she would be a sore spot.
She's not a sore spot, she's not any spot.
She doesn't have anything to do with me, and I have nothing to do with her.
So tell me about that.
Shit.
Manny, you going to psychoanalyze me?
Hey.
We're friends, kid.
We've had a couple of drinks.
Come on.
What do you got to lose?
It might make you a better artist.
Robert stared at his glass of scotch.
Manny pressed, there's an old saying, physician, heal thyself. It means take care of your own faults before trying to take care of someone else's.
It applies to artists as well.
Recognize what makes you tick, what's in your soul before you decide to create another's.
Robert turned his head to wipe his eyes.
He had never talked about it with anyone.
What did he have to lose?
Nothing.
He exhaled and took a drink.
Kid, it will help if you talk about it.
Robert set his glass on the table and sat looking at it, then took a breath.
She took off when I was 4 or 5.
My father sent me over to visit her every couple of weeks.
That went on for a few years, I don't know, maybe 3.
Then she got remarried.
Her new husband didn't want anything to do with me.
I think I reminded him his wife had been to bed with someone other than him.
Anyway, the visits got fewer, until they just weren't anymore.
For a couple of years, she'd come over on my birthday and bring me a present, and tell me, "My, you've gotten so big."
She quit doing that after my 10th birthday.
So you haven't seen her since you were 10?
Actually, the last time was a few years later.
Some friends and I were at the mall playing video games.
Next to that was a play area for younger kids.
You could see it out a window from the game room.
I glanced out and saw her sitting on the curb that circled the playground.
A young boy, 4 or 5, would come up to her every so often to make sure she was watching him.
Then he'd run off and show her something he could do.
She'd clap her hands and laugh.
Robert picked up his drink and looked through the amber liquid.
I watched them for a while.
He twirled the ice with his finger, making the ice clatter against the glass.
And I wondered why she couldn't love me that way.
Manny looked at his glass, it was empty.
Sorry, kid.
So, what did you do?
Did you go talk to her?
No, she never saw me.
The other guys came over.
The video games were boring them, and they wanted to do something else.
So I turned my back and walked away.
Manny motioned to the bartender for another round, then turned to Robert.
What you told me, now I think I see what's going on with you and Kelly.
About why I'm attracted to her?
Bewitched by her, kid.
Shit.
Robert pushed back in his chair.
Hear me out. I did a lot of counseling of people, including kids going through divorces.
There are always abandonment issues for kids in a divorce.
Robert folded his arms and stared at the table.
Yeah,
his mother left before the divorce, and his father had just quietly disappeared into a bottle after it. For guys, those abandonment issues, especially if it's the mother who did the abandoning, can create problems when they grow up. You either treat women as objects, no one's going to get close enough to hurt me again, or you put women on a pedestal. An idealized mother that will save you from being alone. Robert looked down at the drink the bartender had brought and twirled the ice with his finger. Manny continued. You decide it's better to do the abandoning than to go through the pain of being rejected again. It can influence your relationship with women. It drives your love, sex, and intimacy with them. Robert couldn't look at Manny. His eyes were fixed on his drink, his mind on Ariana. It had ended badly with her. He had ended it badly. Manny put his hand on Robert's arm. Kid, it gets worse. A guy can be vulnerable to the negative aspects of a woman. He's drawn to her shadow, dark side. So, what are you getting at? It's probably a good thing to stay away from Kelly. Because Sam would kick my ass? More than that. That's what I've been trying to explain to you. There's a part of Kelly that is drawing you in, like a moth to a flame. Kelly's a black hole pulling you in, and you'll never escape. She's a spider, and she's got you in her web. That's a lot of metaphors at one time for a writer. Aren't you guys supposed to spread those out a bit? We're not supposed to mix them. Listen, there's a dark side of Kelly that you're not seeing. Bullshit. You're a washed-up, has-been old man who's had too much to drink. You're right, and I'm right. Manny took a drink. The dark has the upper hand. The profane, the putrid, it always wins out. I think it's more of an even fight than that. Oh? Manny picked up Robert's glass. What if this was full of pure water, and I put one drop of my piss in it? Would you drink it? Robert grimaced. Right. Now, what if this was full of my piss, and I put one drop of pure water in it? Would you drink that? Robert took his glass back from Manny and took a drink. People aren't glasses of water or piss. Kelly needs my protection. Sam and her mother are her problem. If I got her away from them. Kid, listen to me. I was an undercover security guard at the shop. Writing porn doesn't pay much, so they paid me to watch out for shoplifters. Occasionally Sam would bring Kelly. She was probably 10 or 11. You gotta be shitting me. Yeah, pretty sick bringing a kid to a porn shop. But that's Sam. I'd watch Kelly walking around the store, picking up items. She'd giggle at the customers, which wasn't good. They'd leave without buying anything. Sam would go do other business for the day and leave Kelly alone at the shop. At first, I felt sorry for her and would talk with her and try to distract her from what was around us. I found her fascinating. I had to learn more about her. I'd take her into the office where we could be alone, and we'd sit and talk for hours. I started using my training to find out more. So, you started screwing around in her head like you're doing in mine? Hey, old habits are hard to break. But it wasn't me screwing with her head. It ended up she was screwing with mine. She would let me see layers of her, lead me down paths that I eagerly followed, curving, detouring, oh, the excitement. Oh, the joy. Skipping here and there. See if you can find me. I was young again, take me with you. Then throwing up a wall, leaving me trapped, wondering what the hell happened. She played with me, and I knew it, and I liked it, and I couldn't wait for Sam to bring her back again. Sounds like she bewitched you. See, I know what I'm talking about. So, she's smarter than you. Smarter than me too, I suppose. So what? It's not smarts. It's cunning and manipulative. It's evil. Evil? First, you psych her mind, then you judge her soul. So now you're a defrocked psychiatrist and a Jewish priest, and not very good at either, by the way. Manny didn't respond and finished his drink. At the end of the day, after she was finished with me, she'd go to the back room. You know, the one with the whips and chains, the one we keep real private? Seen it? It has a rack. I know about the rack. Behind it is that wall-size mural depicting a dungeon during the Inquisition. I guess to give customers ideas on how to use the stuff we're trying to sell them. Probably not historically accurate, given all the nudity, and that half the priests are women, but pretty detailed and gruesome.
Yeah.
Man's insane inhumanity to man. And women doing men too, it's an interesting painting.
Kid, I'd find Kelly standing there mesmerized, savoring it.
She was disturbed by it.
Examining it.
It confused her. Manny took Robert's arm and leaned toward him, a blaze burning behind his booze-bleared eyes.
Robert, she was learning.